Yeah. All right. So who are your? I mean, you were talking about who you like earlier. Who are your favorite picks in this draft? For me, we talked about it on the board a bit. I'm a big fan of Murray, Jamal Murray. I don't know if I like the situation he's in going to Denver.
I was a big Gary Harris fan, and through the draft with Denver, like, they threw Harris in the bushes straight up. He's done. Jamal Murray is probably better, man. And like, I look at him, I'm like, he looks like a Brad Beal that's not going to cry in the car after every game.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I like what he brings, and I like that he can actually, you know, double as, you know, a combo guard, you know, so.
Because that's what Moutier needs, too. A combo guard that can take some of that duty off of him so he's not the turnover machine of the NBA.
Yes, exactly.
You know, all the spacing for them is great, too, because Denver's got a great front court, a really young front court that's going forward. They're going to get rid of my guy eventually. But
they have a great coach as well. I mean, he's an underrated coach over there. The kids play hard for him. I mean, you know, they like him. I thought at 7, I think he's great value, though. I mean, like at 7, definitely, yeah. I liked him at 3, you know. I mean, obviously the Celtics didn't need him. They have a lot. They're real crowded in their backcourt. But, I mean, I liked him at 3 to 5, yeah. You know. At 7, I thought he's basically almost a steal in this draft. And another kid I like is a second-generation kid, Sabonis. I really like Sabonis.
I think he could do a lot of the good things for an NBA team, man, like right now.
And right out of the gate, I think he's going to be a solid – I mean, and we talked about this before. I hate the term high basketball IQ, you know, because it's a loaded term. But Sabonis actually is a really smart basketball player on the court. And I think in the high post, you know, once he learns how to adjust to the speed of the NBA.
That's a huge thing, too. Young kids don't understand high post basketball at all.
Yeah, I mean, you know, being, you know, I guess his DNA – you know, coming from a great NBA player like his father was, and plus, you know, going to Gonzaga, which has was a great system.
It is.
Yeah. I think Oklahoma actually, you know, made the greatest trade of the, you know, of that day or that whole week. You know, we had Rose move, we had a couple other people move, but I think them getting Sabonis, they actually fell into a future, you know, solid starter. To a fringe type of maybe, I wouldn't say he's a fringe all star. You'd be a fringe all star player, but he's gonna be one of those guys that is gonna sneak up, and all of a sudden, like, oh wow, he's averaging this amount of points. I didn't even know that. You know, like he's gonna be one of those guys.
Yeah, I'll say this: I don't see a way that he's not serviceable to a team like Oklahoma.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I mean, from day one, he's gonna be serviceable. We already know that, but I'm saying down the line, I think he's eventually gonna turn into something. Where you're like, wow, this kid is averaging 16, 18 points a game, you know, or you know, even 14 and 10 or whatever. He's going to be a good player. And plus, I think he's also going to be one of those kind of, you know, because everyone, when they look at a box score, they look at points and boards, right? But I think he's going to have all those little sneaky stats like steals and assists that you don't really look at for a big man. I think he's going to have all those stats. All right. Okay. Enough of the draft. I know we got into it. We got some other things we got to talk about. Talking about the draft and analytics, though, I want to just look at the state of scouting and development in basketball. I mean, we off air, we talked about this for a second and we talked about it on the forum. But the state of scouting and development, what over the years, what have you seen? I think the question that we had just kind of kicked around for a second is in today's NBA, going through the combine and, you know, looking at these kids the way they look at them, would Reggie Miller get drafted?
Today, no. There's no chance. Because, I mean, if Anthony Morrow can't get drafted, then Reggie Miller, like, he's a great college player. But there's so many times we see great college players just not get drafted or get demolished when it comes time for the combine. I'll look at, okay, even Marcus Paige. That guy was a great college player. And he got drafted. We're like, why? And then we see he got traded for it. Like, it makes no sense. Like, these are anomalies. There's other great players out there, like my dude from Oakland. Gets one of the most electric players out there, Felden. Mm. A beast, but, I mean, yo.
I'm just saying, like, at what point do you look at, you know, basketball fundamentals versus you know, potential and raw athletic ability? Like, where do you find that line? Because the way I'm seeing it these days is that it seems like it's really focused on vertical, you know, wingspan.
Yo, you can ask Morris, because he's got a physical beast in Julius Randle out there that I think is probably one of the worst starting power forwards in the league.
I wouldn't say I'm high on Randle, but I'm not so down on the kid either. I think I think he'll end up to be a decent player, but you really think he's horrible.
Nah, here's my thing. Like, this is a certain kind of stupid. Like, I've seen a lot of bad draft picks come through Charlotte. I'm being real. And a lot of other bad teams too, because I was an Orlando fan back when, you know, I didn't have a team. So I'm seeing guys come through there too. I'm like, yo, when you got all that ability and like your entire college career is based on two moves, go left and then strongly go left. I mean, okay, here's my thing with Randle. How do you take an entire year off with NBA trainers and not get better?
Well, yeah, Byron's not for a coach, right?
No. Like, even then, like, there's something to say about that. There's guys who take a year off and they make massive improvements. Even a guy from Duke, up in Milwaukee and everything. Like, yeah, he's hurt. He came off a massive injury, you know, but he still showed improvement and versatility to his game that he did not have in college.
I can see that. I think Randle, though, has, you know, he's definitely a two-trick pony, but, I mean, it worked for Boozer.
Boozer could hit a shot, Boozer could make a pass, and Boozer knew how to move it out of the basketball.
I think Randle is, like, an advanced stat enigma. Because he, like, in one instance, he's a terrible defender. He can't defend to save his life, but he's fast and he's very strong. So what's wrong here? And he's also, you look at his measurements, he has little T-Rex arms, but he's grabbing 10 boards a night.
He's definitely stubby. You know, he's definitely stubby. But I think that has something to do with a little bit of his defense. He's also, like guys said, he's definitely a special brand of stupid on defense. And the thing about him, though, is that he does have a lot of, you know, talent. He's strong. He's the type of strong we haven't seen.
I'll give him that. He's got an old school power forward frame where it doesn't matter where he is. If he sees a rebound and he's, you know, if he thinks he can get it, he's probably going to get that board. That's a rare talent in itself. But I've seen guys with more physical tools to be defenders and that were still as dumb. And they somehow made it, you know, they survived in the NBA by being able to stay on the floor. LA wasn't trying to win games at all last year. You know, they weren't. But the moment they do try to win games, you can't have him on the floor because he can't play defense. And you can deal with a guard who can't play defense, but bigs who can't, that's rough.
Well, you can't have two bigs who can't play defense for sure. You know, yeah, like, well,
and LA doesn't have a center right now.
Yeah, that's true.
But I don't know. I think he can develop into something, you know. I'm not saying he's never gonna be a good defender. I'll say that.
I've said it on slaying.com.
Yeah.
That his entire livelihood in the NBA depends on whether or not he could start making a jump shot, and I don't think he can.
Yeah, I 100% agree that his whole game will evolve into something incredible if he gets like a 15-foot, 18-foot jumper.
And like DY was saying, he had a whole year to improve our...
Like, he knew that going into Summer League of last season.
Mm-hmm. And his like, jump shot isn't. I mean, it's horrible. It's terrible.
I'm gonna be. Maybe I'm being a little nice, but I'm gonna be fair on this though. A foot injury to a big man is a scary thing.
True.
Mm-hmm. And especially when you're putting twerking weight like this kid is, you know, I think he probably, you know, and he probably shouldn't have, but he probably eased into, you know, his whole training regimen, just getting his foot back in this place. I mean. We'll see. I think this next year is make or break for him.
See, that's cool. Cause you're nice. I'm a hater.
Yeah, we know that.
I mean, I'm going to be real about it. It's just, like, again, I've seen kids with better tools than him fail.
The thing about, though, is that the dude rebounds at an amazing clip. And he just has an NBA power forward frame. That you just don't find. I mean, there's a lot of dudes that can jump out the gym, a lot of dudes with long arms, a lot of dudes that actually have a nice stroke. But there's something about the way Randle is just built that makes you, if I'm LA, I want to give this guy a chance to develop. I'm not ready to write him off after 2 years. That's just how I look at it.
I was so high. Here's my thing. Okay. Here's my thing. He has the physical tools to be Paul Millsap, but better.
Yeah.
But the mental aspect of that is nowhere to be found. And it's not just, okay, it's not just what can he do? Like, okay, he doesn't have a jump shot. His entire approach to an offense of a game of basketball is like, I don't know what I'm doing other than what I'm doing. And that's a huge problem for any young big trying to come to the NBA. Like, you don't know what you're doing at the high post. Like, why is he ever on the 3-point line? Like, who told you to do that? Like, I know Morris has seen him jack threes, and it's probably been like, you know, take a shot, you know. You know, I was standing up, let me sit back down. That kind of stuff, you know.
But you know who he reminds me of, though, actually? He reminds me of Zach Randolph. You know, because when Zach Randolph came in the league, he was a knucklehead.
True, but he had game. He could hoop, though.
No, he was a knucklehead. Zach Randolph was like, I mean, like, and then when he got traded to New York, and you saw how he was playing with Marbury, yeah, you swore his career was done. He's going to be in China in the next couple of years. He put it together when he went to Memphis and showed what all them tools can do for you as a big. Randolph kind of reminds me of that a little bit. If he can stay, if someone can get in his head and be like, yo, you don't have many chances left.
Yo, he okay. I'll raise you one like this. Okay. LA has all these like legendary big men just waiting to volunteer their knowledge and skills. How did Andrew Bynum improve more in a year and a half than Julius Randle?
What I don't like about after seeing a year of Randle play, he looks like a football player trying to play basketball.
Yo, I would love him at tight end, bro. He would be a monster.
Yeah, he looks like you give him the ball and he just puts his head down until he gets where he wants to go. But he can't do that in the NBA.
Yo,
not anymore, at least.
Yo, nobody's trying to see Julius Randle come across the middle. I'm trying to say that right now, man.
The thing about it, though, is that Andrew Bynum is kind of a different beast. Andrew Bynum was, you know, he was a center, a big, true center. Like, you know, like, yeah. You know, he was built like, the legendary centers that have all come through there. He was built like that. Randle is you know, he's kind of a Barkley type of build. You know, I don't want to compare him because they're not even close to the same talent level or anything, but the way he's built,
I feel you.
You know, he's kind of a Barkley type of build. So when you have a guy like Kareem come through and be like, "Yo, you got to do all this," he can't teach Randle how to play with that build. You know, like he could tell him some, you know, how to seal dudes off or how to, you know, how to maybe space the floor a little better. But
yo, even that,
yeah, he's gonna have to learn how to use his build to be successful. That's true. You know, but so with that being said, though,
that was way too much time for Randle.
Yeah.
He's hurt listening to that. I feel you, man.
I mean, the NBA is really in a weird position because they're drafting these kids younger and younger. I mean, I wouldn't have been surprised a couple years ago they were drafting kids out of middle school. You know, this is going to bring me to the next part that I want to talk about is, do you think they should have a minor league system?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been brought up before, and I spoke about it, God, years ago. But the D-League, the amount of improvement the D-League has had in the last couple of years has been monstrous. Like, yeah, it's not NCAA level. It'll never be NCAA level. But it's finally to the point where it's a legit farm system for guys who maybe don't want to make that. You know, there's plenty of guys in high school that don't want to go to college, and for a good reason. And they also don't want to go to China, and they don't want to go to Europe. Guys can go through the D League now, and actually, you know, it can work.
But I know you're going somewhere with this, but look at,
yeah.
Why can it be as good or better than NCAA basketball? It's kind of what I'm getting at, because if they committed to this minor league like baseball had, you know, baseball's all in, all chips in. Like they said, NCAA, we don't give a damn if you make any money ever again. Like, we don't care. Like, we're gonna do a minor. We're gonna have 3, 5, 6 teams, and take all the players that have any talent at all and put them in it.
I mean, I would want to believe that, but baseball's College World Series is never going to touch March Madness, and kids aren't going to wake up one day saying, "I want to play for the Idaho what was it, the main Red Claws?
Yeah.
Then they're not going to want to do that. I mean, the money to play in the D League is enough, I guess, to make a livelihood on, barely, but.
I mean, the NBA, I mean, how many rounds, was the NBA draft, up years ago?
God, yeah.
You could have a 4-round draft, 5-round draft, And like I was saying earlier, like dudes like, Morrow or Reggie Miller who weren't drafted, Gary Payton too,
Yeah.
He wasn't drafted, right? I mean, he's getting a contract from Houston. There's no reason why a kid like him shouldn't have been drafted.
I wouldn't be against a system where guys would commit, the way baseball has prospects are still in college, but they're basically, they're coming in eventually or something like that. Or, a minor league, I would like to see something like that happen, but the NCAA is a monster, man.
I'm just saying a true minor league system, because the kids with any talent at all are one and done. They're one and done.
or like Alex Palathrias in the state or what all.
I'm just saying, for the most part, though, the kids any amount of talent are one and done. And for financial reasons. I mean, you can't blame them. A lot of kids could use a couple years of seasoning at a lower level and then come in NBA and be monsters, But if you have a chance to be a top 15, a top 18 pick, that's money. If you were a top 18 pick and ended up in the minor league for a year, you're still getting paid the same amount because the rookie contracts are locked. If you drafted number one and you go to the minor leagues, you're still getting that money.
Here's my thing. It reflected finally in this draft where there was 17 European players picked or something like that.
Yeah.
And you saw guys, that were, legit NCAA players sitting in the green room till they start changing the chairs and the lights. That almost never happens. But the thing is, because you can stash a guy and develop him in a league that's as good as or close to, the NCAA. All right. So we don't have a legit farm system here. We don't have that yet. But it's easier to farm players overseas.
Yeah, it is. But at the same time, why shouldn't we have it here? I mean, every team should have their own minor league team or D-League team, like affiliate, like direct. And a couple teams do. The Spurs do. And, I know a couple other teams have started to do that. But if they made a conscious effort to actually build a legit minor league system.
Can't fight NCAA, man. It's too big. That's all it is.
Well, I don't see why you couldn't. Look at, get rid of the stupid age limit. Let them get drafted at 18. Because they were already killing the NCAA. They were destroying the NCAA when they were drafting Kobe's and when they were drafting Jonathan Benders,
And then coaches were hurting too because they wouldn't even recruit those kids. Mike Krzyzewski made it a point. I'm not bringing in one and done guys. He said that for the longest time, and now he's like, "Hey, listen, Ingram, Okafor, I got spots for you, Kyrie."
But if maybe there's something else behind it that they don't want to destroy the NCAA. But if they wanted to go head up with the NCAA, they'd have a pretty good chance. Because I'm telling you, if I'm 18 or 17 or whatever, right, and the NBA team says, "Yo, we're going to draft you, in the first round," but you're not ready for the, you're not ready for the big leagues yet. You're going to play one year probably in the minor league, but you're still going to make X million dollars. Are you down? What do you think the answer should be? I think for my, if they came to me now, I say yes. but it's like if I'm 17 and I have the option to get paid out of high school without any fear of nulling my knee up or, hurting myself for the NCAA, because I ain't getting paid by the NCAA at all. I mean, well, legally. Okay, sorry. But, technically, legally, I'm not getting, even if I'm getting paid by the NCAA, it's not the same amount of money. There ain't millions of dollars going through these hands that, and legally, where I don't have to worry about nothing, So, my draft stock might raise because I played well in the NCAA, and that's going to net me some more money. That's true. That's all possibility. But I could end up going 28.
I'll say this. If there was I think that guys who are projected as second round picks, I think that the fact that the way it's set up now where it's not a guaranteed contract, I think I would like to see that change as in, okay, it would be guaranteed and it wouldn't be a guaranteed roster spot, but you would be within an organization and you could be farmed in the D League, whatever like that. A second and third round along those lines would be great for all parties, in my opinion, because colleges don't want these kinds of one and done guys. Like, they can't sustain that. You have to be a special kind of program to be able to bring those guys in regularly and not destroy yourself. Like LSU and Ben Simmons last year, that was a train wreck on a comedy show. Like, he had a film crew following around. Like, they couldn't do that. And LSU's been set back like 5 years by it. But, I think that kids like, you know, Felder or, you know, some of these other second round guards, like, matter of fact, NC State's point guard, the guy the Knicks just brought in, Barber, other guys, these guys, I think that they would be better off. Like, you don't, you know, you're not getting anything by being in college anymore. You're not going to get better playing, you know, especially if you're in the WAC or something like that. You're not going to get better playing those people. A second and third round pick, let him go to the D League. And the way the D League's improved, it makes sense. It didn't save PJ Harrison, but it could save somebody else, you know?
PJ Harrison died for the sins. I just think, though, in general, though, if they have to either, they have to either commit to it or you know, or let the NCAA develop these kids, because they're kind of, it's, I never really liked that kind of wishy-washy in between.
Right.
But, you know, they've made some strides to make it better and make it a little more, you know, solid, but they're still pretty kind of like, well, we got these guys going to the NCAA and then we got guys coming to the D League. They need to either commit to it or, you know, or not. You know, that's kind of my stance on it.
It's getting better. And that's really more than I thought that D League would ever do 5 years ago. Like, I never would have thought that the D League would create guys like, what's his name, Jonathan Simmons or these other players that came out and actually made a huge impact for teams. Like, hell, Whiteside shit.
Oh, yeah.
You know? But it's just also, it's not even really, it's not advantageous for teams to bring in D-League guys because they can't even hold them. Like what Miami's going through now, they found an amazing prospect in Whiteside. No one else gave him a chance. He goes in, he's one of the best centers in the league right now. But now that they have him, they can't even, they're not even able to really retain him without risk. You know, they had to go through an entire ordeal just to keep a guy that they found. That should be their whole, like, we found him, he's ours. The bird rights there, that they don't apply anymore. So I think there should be something, some provision that protects teams, especially small market teams. They have to work so hard to find guys.
Or, I'm just saying, if you actually commit to these, if you make it an official minor league where every team has an affiliate, every team, you know, it's basically the same organization, like baseball. Yeah. You know, you can apply to bird rights, you know, within, you know, in the contracts. I mean, like, if you sign for the D-League team for a couple of years and then you move them up, that should be within the organization. I mean, these are all things that, you know, you just, they can iron out.
No, I hear you. But some teams ain't shit. I mean, some teams have chosen not to have D-League affiliates or whatever. I'm like, hey, you know, he's our player, but he's playing on Portland Summer League team or some shit like that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but that's because they haven't committed yet. They haven't made this an actual league. Like, they made it where the owners have to get in there and make an affiliate league and make it, like, you know, because you have to have them in baseball. You know, there's no team that doesn't have them, you know? So if you do that in basketball, then I think the culture of it would change. That's just, you know, how I look at it. I really think it would be a good look for the NBA to have.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea. It's just the NBA seems to be, like, wrong place, wrong time with this, because they had teams, like you were saying, drafting younger and younger every year, taking giant risks, like using these very limited assets they have in high draft picks, and taking some dude just because he was dunking on freshmen in high school, and so now, you know, they had to scramble and save these owners from themselves. Okay, now you got to go to college for at least 1 year, because you can't set up an entire minor league, and the minor league they could have set up back then would have been a shit show.
Yeah.
And now it feels like it's slowly evolving where the D-League is becoming that, which is great for teams. I think it's great for everyone except for the NCAA.
Yeah.
And there's an effort to protect them. Like, it really is. The one-and-done thing, and then, like, what they change it to, I mean
you know. I'm almost always going to side with the player on this topic, because it's their right to make their money. You know what I'm saying? And to make it where you have to be 19 to go into the NBA draft just seems kind of asinine. Like, it just seems kind of backwards because you're going to protect the owners from themselves. Fair enough.
True.
But if you expand that draft, let the owners act a fool. Like, yo, I want this kid because, you know, he's got a 42-inch vertical or whatever. You know, like, I want that. You know, let him draft that and put him in the D League or put him in a minor league. You know, and basically fuck the NCAA. You know, that's basically all. You know what I mean? You know, the NCAA has made so much free money on kids for, you know, hundreds of years that if they can't find a way to stay afloat, to be relevant still, then, you know, basically fuck them.
I mean, I would love to see the NCAA die in a lot of ways, college football too. But I mean, between NCAA and the AAU just ruining prospects, man, like, that's a lot of money to fight.
Yeah, but you know, the thing about it is that would give these kids an actual chance to be good basketball players. I mean, because we see a lot of things, which is going to bring me to my next topic as far as developing players and stuff, is, for example, the post play. I know the league has changed, right? We talked about it, you know, just a couple minutes ago with analytics. Like, the post play is dying. And I really think it's because you have a lot of these one-and-done kids. You know, they're really athletic. They come in, and the NCAA doesn't have time to develop them. And they don't care to because, yo, we need to win a championship. We need to get extra money. We need it. We don't have time to worry about you. You can't sit. You can't develop. You got to come in and play. So we're going to play you not the right way. We're going to play you how we can. You know, like we just talked about Randall. Like, all right, you only got one move. Use that move all the time until you go to the NBA. You know, like, it was just like, you know, we're not going to teach you. We're not going to develop you because it's not in our best interest. It's not in the NCAA's best interest to sit a kid down and teach him how to play in the post because he's gone next year.
I mean, I hear that. But before I blame the NCAA, I blame AAU and high school, like, the way that's just turned into a cash grab for a lot of people. Like, I'm going to go to Aaron Gordon, for example, and bring him up again.
Okay.
If you see him through high school, like, he played guard the whole time. And when he got to college, he was like, well, I mean, the coach got this great prospect, and all he knows how to do is drive. Like, well, all right, then. I guess that's what you're going to do, and we're going to make it work the best we can. Then he gets to Orlando, and you would think, like, if this guy had a post game, he would be unstoppable. But he just learned how to play basketball like halfway through his rookie year. You know, like that's it's not just on the NCAA. It's a level further. High school basketball is jacked up. You seen AAU games lately? Like, all these kids, all the guards know how to do is drive, chuck threes, and throw alleys. Like, you will never see an entry pass in high school anymore. Unless they go to like a real public school or something like that. Maybe up in New York where they still kind of have that thing going, but AAU basketball is killed. It's killed American hoops in a lot of ways. That's why it's more and more European guys coming over.
I mean, this is a kind of a lost art in the NBA now. I mean, who are your top three players in the post? I'm talking about pure post in the NBA today.
Well, I gotta say Al Jeff. Like,
Al Jeff,
yo, he's a beast. Cancer, and God. I hate saying LaMarcus Aldridge, but when he chooses to actually post up and put some moves on somebody, he can do it whenever he wants to anybody. He chooses not to. He much rather, I mean, he's got a great mid-range game, but okay. So LMA's my other guy. But the thing is, if you look at young players who actually have legit post games, like, Okafor is a rarity. He's a unicorn in himself. Everybody talks about KP, but you don't see 7-footers coming out of high school and college with that kind of defined post game. Like, Cat can do it all. Amazing prospect. But Okafor, like, when he gets in a post, he's doing some old man stuff like you ain't seen since 87.
Cat is more of a, like, yo, I'm long, I'm super athletic, I'm super talented, and I got a feel for the game. But his post game, once it gets refined, if it ever does get
it's
gonna be crazy. So but
I mean, I'll bring another guy, another example real quick. I didn't mean to cut you off. Nurkic for Denver.
Yeah.
Like, I think it was a clip from way back, but it's like JaVale McGee was trying to guard him or something like that. His mind was just blown how this guy just, like, destroyed him and jumped 3 inches. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I'm going to go back to Cat at Okafor. Another talented kid that came out recently was Davis, right? Davis, as good as he is, he has no post game. His post game is like almost like a tragedy. You know, like, it's weak. He should be incredible. I mean, like, and I don't want to take anything away from the kid because he has ways to score and he's an amazing player. But if he could get in that post and do work.
I mean, first off, would he survive? But secondly.
I mean, I know he's being shocked, but I'm just saying in general, his skill set.
I don't see why he doesn't have a sweeping hook. Like, he should be able to just run across the middle of the lane and just score automatically, and there's nothing anyone could do about it. Like, even Dwight's garbage little hook, I would love to see Anthony Davis just do that with regularity, and again, no one could stop it. That kind of length, that kind of, you know, no one can do anything about it.
But it's like, why? Why is this gone? Like, I mean, I know you said AAU, yeah, they're to blame, and NCAA, they don't give a fuck. Why has this post play just disappeared from the NBA? Is it because they can't develop them? They don't have time? I mean, you know, GM's got like 2 years, you know, and if you're not showing proof or getting close to the playoffs, you're fired.
See, I don't think post play is dead. I think the ability to play it effectively is diminished
by the way, one person that we all forgot to talk about in the post, Cousins. Cousins is
He's a beast too.
He's incredible.
I think he's probably a great guy. He just has never admitted to himself that he might be an asshole.
I don't want to get into that, you know. But the thing about it though is that he's a one in a million type of players as far as all of his physical gifts and all of his talents that all come together at once. You know what I mean? Like, the dude is an incredible athlete. He's also built like a defensive end. He's got great handles. He does it all. But you get him in that post, though, and the dude is unstoppable.
Yeah.
He's got a little bit of that Rasheed Wallace disease where he doesn't want to go down there no more.
I mean, I don't blame him. I mean, you know, Cousins and the refs, that's an ongoing saga, you know, waiting for the trilogy to complete. He's got great feet. And a lot of guys coming out don't have the feet to work the post that well in the NBA, straight up.
I mean, but that's where it comes down to developing these kids. I mean, some kids are never going to develop, but they don't have – it seems like everything is on such a limited time frame, right? You hire a GM, okay? Okay, well, we didn't go to the playoffs, you're fired. Or, you know, we hire a coach, didn't go to the playoffs, so you're fired. You know, it's just like a revolving door, and there's no, you know, stability. So if I get a kid, like, you know, going back to what we talked about earlier, Maker. You know, I draft this Maker kid. I need him to produce by year two. You know, like, he needs to show, like, some minutes. And if he doesn't, I might get fired as a GM or as a coach. Probably the coach first, then the GM, right? You know, it seems like they're drafting these projects, but they don't have time to finish the project.
Some of those guys who are in, you know, and going for their next contract. Like, I'm talking about guys who do have all the physical ability. They were drafted as projects and they ended up playing, you know, they fulfilled their role. Like, I'm talking, Derek Favors, Thaddeus Young. These guys are low post guys who still have never developed a real post game. That's on them. That's on them.
Yeah. I mean, some of those guys, like Thaddeus Young, has always been kind of a tweener. Like, you know, him and like Rashard Lewis are basically cut from the same cloth, you know, like, they've always been kind of, you know, 6'10", 6'11" guys that just are allergic to the paint.
I mean, I can see that, but all you gotta do is, you know, call up Luis Scola one off season, and all of a sudden he might be a fringe all star instead of just being some guy who gets thrown in on a trade and might be in a good situation on the next team.
I'm an old man, okay. So let's just get that out there. I grew up. I watched that in the 80s. You know, I seen Magic Johnson play live. You know, and you know, you go back to those days, and I don't want to be the dude that says like back in the day, you know, because I know the NBA has changed. It's a different game. I mean, the range of these players now is incredible. So you don't have as much of a pressing need to have a low post score, but I still think it's such a valuable skill because you got players like Curry and Klay Thompson that can shoot from anywhere on the floor. Right, if you have a player that demands a double team in the post, how can you stop that?
The guys who, again, I think AAU has ruined a good 6 years of prospects in the NBA. Straight up, I mean, it's starting to come back to that now with European guys coming over, and they're talented as hell too. Like Rudy Gobert is a beast on the low block by himself. Like he's going to be a great low post threat. But NCAA is kind of coming back to it. It's just AAU, man. Like if you are taught to play guard because you might be the next KD, like Scal, I think honestly, if he had grown up in the paint, then he would have actually got more than 3 rebounds a game. But instead of playing AAU ball and everything, he's over there like trying to cross people up on the 3-point line. Like, dog, you're not going to be KD. You're not, you know?
I guess just it's that old man in me that's just sad to see like a complete skill set like basically become extinct in the NBA. I mean, in the late 90s, early 2000s, it was like that mid-range game was dying, right? So people were saying the Europeans were killing us in the mid-range game. And then after that, the whole, I mean, the post-game is I think we have a chance for it to really come back strong because we have some talented players like Okafor. And you have, you know, Cousins is in the league and, you know, I guess, you know, LaMarcus Aldridge still can get in the post, you know. We have a chance to have kind of a comeback way of this golden age of centers, you know, to come back. But it just saddens me to see this whole skill set just basically go the way of the dinosaur.
I mean, you just said it, like, golden age probably could come back. Like, the NBA hasn't had this much talent at center, young talent at center, in a decade.
Yeah.
Like, right now is a great time. Cousins, Davis, Cat, Okafor, LMA, he's not old. I mean, there's plenty of guys out there that are going to be beasts for a long time. Even, the guy in Orlando, not Valanciunas, but, that might have been him, whatever. I don't know. He's a great scorer. Just can't play defense for shit. Like, you see a lot of that where these guys can score in the post, but their defense won't let them stay on the court. Cantor is a beast on the low block. He cannot stay on the court because his defense is probably like a basketball atrocity. You know what I'm saying? But you're talking about getting old. Like, for me, it's guards who can't play point guard for real. Guards who are dependent on someone to facilitate them from the high post or another big to come out, stretch the floor and help them run their own team. This is a weird time for me because I used to see guys like running an actual offense. Now it's like, it's not a full-time job for guards anymore.
Well, it's kind of weird because guards now have been like, the way the NBA has evolved, guards has become more of a, like the point guard has to score now.
I think it's easier. I mean, the way that they play defense now, it's easier than ever for a guard, a highly athletic guard, to score.
Well, the rules favor them.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, back in the day, you know, you could hand check and hold jerseys, and that was good. That was good defense. I mean, John Stockton, you know, he used to basically, you know, was hold your goon. Jersey the entire time. You basically get in your shorts, like literally.
He's a goon, yeah.
Yeah, you know. I'm from Seattle, so, you know, we always thought he was a goon, you know. But the thing is that, like, you know, these days, he'd foul out. You know, he'd lead the league in techs and flagrants because, you know, he's just, you know, he was a dirty-ass player. And that was good defense back then. These days, defense is so, like, it's so light and it's just not as, you know. I mean, these are obviously assets that teams want to protect. So the NBA has reflected the rule changes for that. But, yeah, definitely guards become more important to just the overall scheme of scoring.
The last a couple MVPs, like, okay, you got Derrick Rose. The finals with Curry was a great example too. But these guys, they're the best point guards in the league. But at the same time, they have excellent facilitation from their bigs inside that just was not, I don't want to say it's a crutch. It's not a crutch. It's just a part of the responsibility now. It's just shared. Like Derrick Rose had Joakim Noah. Curry didn't even play point guard in the finals or through most of the playoffs, in my opinion. You know, that just never happened 10 years ago. So you see guys like John Wall struggle. I think a lot of his struggles come from the fact that he doesn't have a facilitating big on his team to take some of that pressure off of him. He has more touches than any other guard in the NBA over the last couple of years.
Well, I mean, you know, my old man, I really think that was like the shooting guard's job, you know, to like,
yeah,
to help him out. But like, the thing is that like nowadays you hear that term, we need a stretch four, we need to stretch the defense.
Oh yeah, point forward or something. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of an odd time, all around. Cause like, this is where AAU is coming in. They are developing all these, you know, basically everybody's a guard.
Yeah. It's jacked up, but yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I have some more stuff I could talk about that, but let's move on a little bit here.